Good afternoon. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. I have no relationships to disclose. And as already been mentioned, and I don't think you could have an occupational health and safety or food safety talk today without a bunch of us geeking out on Upton Sinclair and the fact that we are in Chicago. So it's exciting to actually get to speak to you from Chicago, which over 100 years ago had some of the most significant food safety history we've had in the United States. And again, I'm referring to Upton Sinclair and the publication of his famous novel, The Jungle, which documented these arduous working conditions and egregious meat production processes that were taking place in the U.S. but were going unregulated. And this novel would really draw attention to the fact that contamination of food was a significant problem in the United States. And even today, this problem persists. It's a significant public health problem. I'm sure some of you have seen these numbers over these days, where we have millions of people that get sick every single year from contaminated food or beverages. Unfortunately, there's probably many of you in the room who've suffered from this. But then thousands end up in the hospital and even die from contaminated foods. So these data, in conjunction with a number of very serious multi-state outbreaks we had in the United States in the 2000s, would really motivate Congress to pay more attention to this issue again since the days of Upton Sinclair and decide to take action on food safety. So in 2011, President Barack Obama signed the Food Safety Modernization Act into law. And the idea behind this law was to create a new food safety system in the U.S. that would actually prevent contamination rather than simply responding to it after it had happened. And this law was characterized as one of the most revolutionary food safety laws we had seen in this country in over 100 years, since the days of Upton Sinclair. So there's a variety of sources of contaminated food in the U.S., but what many people don't realize is that one of the most common is described as food workers through improper health and unhygienic behaviors. So really, the success of this brand new food safety system in the U.S. depends on the extent to which it can manage this connection between workers and contaminated food. So what do I mean by food workers? So when we're talking about food workers, we're generally talking about 1/6 of the U.S. workforce. This is about 20 million people in the U.S. And they're commonly characterized as working within 5 core sectors of the food system. So we've talked about some of them already this afternoon. But if we think of the chain, on one end we have our production workers. These are agricultural workers, but also those that tend to livestock, raise livestock, and fishermen. Then we have processing workers who are largely working in big factories and taking the raw inputs into processed foods. Distribution workers who often get neglected, and these are workers who are transporting food, but also workers who are working in warehouses. Our retail workers, we generally think of our grocery store workers, but these are anybody who's selling food. And then as you can see, the by far the largest sector is our service sector, and generally we think of our restaurant workers. And so while workers in these sectors are going to be engaging in a variety of different tasks, what we know to be true across sectors is that workers experience poor wages and working conditions. And as we talked about today, this is on a variety of dimensions. So if we just think of the physical work environment, they're often working in very hot or cold temperatures used to preserve foods around very loud noises. Now, you could certainly have a managerial position in the food industry and wear a suit to work, but the reality is that the vast majority of food workers work in what are called frontline positions. And so these are positions where they have little decision-making capacity, they're low on the workplace hierarchy, and they're often engaging in very repetitive tasks for their job. Now, there are reports that have come out that show that some workers in the food industry experience higher rates of sexual harassment and abuse than workers in the workforce generally. Workers often lack access to key benefits like paid sick days and health insurance. They earn low wages, and they suffer from uncertain schedules. They have shift work that really makes it hard for workers to achieve economic stability. And then on a broader level, some food workers are exempt from basic federal labor protection. So if we think of farm workers are exempt from overtime payments. And because the food industry generally doesn't require formal credentials to be hired, we see higher numbers of folks who are undocumented in the food industry. So perhaps some of this information is new to you. It was new to me when I first started researching this topic. And in addition to being social injustice and issues, and that these issues are commonly looked at through that frame, I started to wonder, well, what do these conditions mean for the safety of our U.S. food supply? You know, how do these conditions impact workers' ability to handle food safely? So if you look into the existing literature on this topic, you're not going to find much to help you answer this question. The studies that exist within the food safety literature generally do not look at food workers, and they're not drawing these connections between workers living in working conditions and the safety of the U.S. food supply. They often exclude workers' perspectives as well. But you can look at some other literature to help gain some insights on what these connections may mean, including general theories we use in public health, like fundamental causes of disease theory and social determinants of health, which are drawing connections between our social and structural context and health outcomes. There's also other literatures that have begun to look at some issues that are relevant for the food safety world, which includes this idea of presenteeism. So most of us have probably heard of absenteeism. But presenteeism is this idea of working while sick. And so these literatures have identified that people come to work sick for workplace factors and social factors, including being low on the workplace hierarchy, perceiving yourself to be temporary or easily replaceable, and lacking access to benefits like paid sick days. So characteristics we know to be true for the food worker population. Yet we're not talking about this in the food safety literature. So this conceptual model starts to bring together some of these big issues that I'm talking about, but really to draw connections between these broader social and structural vulnerabilities of this population and food safety outcomes, we first have to step back and think about, well, how do we currently talk about the role of workers in the U.S. food safety system? How do we characterize them to be hazards, and how are we talking about their working conditions within these issues within our food safety laws? So the two studies that I'm going to talk briefly about this afternoon try to look at this question from two different perspectives. The first being how this brand new food safety system in the U.S. accounts for the role of workers in ensuring safe food, and then how food workers perceive their role in food safety and really trying to ground those perceptions within their everyday living and working conditions. So for the first study, I looked at this brand new law that I referenced that was passed in 2011, the Food Safety Modernization Act. And so as many of you know, when laws are passed, they are bare bones, they're skeletons, right? So it's up to federal agencies generally to administer these laws. So it's up to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to develop proposed rules about what this system is going to look like on the ground. So the FDA has been in the process of releasing a series of proposed rules. And two of these rules actually deal with workers and workers' role in this brand new prevention-based food safety system. So I purposefully extracted these rules, looked at them, and pulled out the sections of text that are actually talking about workers. So here's just a picture of the 300 pages of regulatory text, but condensed down into the actual sections within those rules that had anything to do with workers, their living conditions, hygiene, working conditions, etc. So what did I find? How does this brand new food safety system in the U.S. account for the role of workers? Well, how do they describe them as hazards? So on a basic level, this has to do with the fact that workers are human beings. Therefore, they can harbor foodborne pathogens. But in addition to that, workers can have what was called poor health, and this was defined as having an illness, an open lesion, boils, sores, infected wounds. Now, workers who have this poor health can then transmit it to food or other workers through what was called inadequate hygienic behavior. So this was coming to work sick, not properly changing your gloves or washing your hands properly, or having an infected wound and not properly bandaging it, for example. Now, there was some consideration within this new law about what the sources of these hazards may be. So why do workers have poor health and engage in inadequate hygienic behaviors? So these explanations largely fell into two categories, the first being that workers simply lack adequate food safety knowledge and skills to exercise proper health at work and proper hygienic practices. So here's a quote from the proposed rule saying, food handlers should be informed of the dangers of poor personal hygiene and unsanitary practice, right? The assumption is they're not informed about this. There was also some consideration for workers' levels of education and literacy issues, and that low levels of literacy may impact the extent to which they can take in food safety knowledge and handle food safely. Now, there was some consideration for the work environment, and this was largely related to sanitary facilities. So if there's inadequate sanitary facilities, if sinks aren't working properly, if the toilets are not properly conveying waste from the work site, this could contribute to the extent that workers contaminate food. There was also some consideration for the nature of the work environment. So if we think of an agricultural worker working over, here's a picture of the Salinas Valley in California, they're working over many acres of land. And so if they are working in these large spaces for long hours, this may impact the extent to which they're actually going to use a toilet or a sink properly when needed. So now that we understand how this new system accounts for workers as hazards to food, what are the controls put in place that are going to keep our food supply safe, right? So these are our most cutting-edge interventions to ensure that we are breaking this connection between workers' poor health and the food supply. So these, as you may suspect, are adequate sanitary facilities. These are facilities that are properly stocked and they're clean. And then, of course, training. All workers need to have training on the key practices like washing their hands and changing their gloves. And this is an example of the FDA training on the slide. It might be a little hard to see, but it's on their website. It needs to be available in pictures and be multilingual as well. So largely, this brand new food safety system in the U.S. accounts for the role of worker and food safety at an individual level. And workers' broader social and structural context, their working and living conditions, are generally not connected as a food safety issue in this law. Okay, now comparing to the food worker's perspective. So in this next study, I conducted 25 in-depth interviews with food service workers in Baltimore, Maryland. I conducted these interviews with workers away from their worksite in a confidential space and largely asked them about their perceptions of barriers to these key food safety practices. Why might a worker not be able to wash their hands properly? Why might a worker be coming to work sick when they're not supposed to? And then organized their responses using a social ecological model to really emphasize that in addition to individual level factors like knowledge, skill, and training, there's a community, political, social context to behavior, reasons why we may or may not engage in a proper practice. So the participants I spoke with held a variety of roles, but these are all roles where they were handling food regularly. And just some high-level demographics, their average age was 31 years old. About half participated in some form of public assistance, and the vast majority, 84%, lacked access to paid sick days. So workers identified factors at all levels of the social ecological model that they perceived to impact proper food safety practices, and some of these responses are found in some previous studies on this issue, such as time pressure, high customer volume, and fear of negative consequences. You're worried that you're going to lose shifts or lose your job if you don't show up to work, even if you're not feeling well. Now, workers, I want to say, spoke less about knowledge. Some people actually said, look, I don't think it's a knowledge issue. People know what to do. It's these other factors in the work environment that are preventing us from following these practices. Now, the factors I'm going to focus on this afternoon briefly were the additional factors that were brought up that haven't been mentioned in the literature before and relate to workers' work environment, their community, and policy-level issues. And largely, these factors were described as barriers to having clean uniforms, which is a requirement that food service workers have, clean uniforms each day, and not working while sick. So one of these factors related to workplace policies. So what I want to highlight is the uniform policies in food service environments. Now, workers are working 5 to 7 days a week, but they're often issued 2 uniforms that they buy on their own, and they're required to clean themselves. And many workers mentioned that this just made it difficult for them to have a clean uniform every day at work. Workers also talked about doctor's notes. And so in food service environments, workers are required to have a doctor's note if they've been out sick. But many workers said that this actually encouraged presenteeism. They couldn't afford to go to a doctor. It wasn't readily accessible. So to get around this policy, they were actually showing up to work sick to physically prove to their managers that they were not feeling well so they wouldn't be penalized and then could be sent home. Workers also talked about wages and benefits being related to their ability to handle food safely. So workers said, look, I'm barely paid enough to cook, prepare, and stock food, but food safety requirements are unaffordable. I can't go and clean my uniform every day. I have to show up to work. I'm not getting paid sick days. It's unaffordable to adhere to these practices. I can't afford to take off, as workers said. Others talked about the fact that they lacked paid sick days, and as this female server says, if you don't have sick time, you don't have insurance, you're going to walk into that job halfway dead because you got to pay the bills. And because workers were working through their illnesses, they talked about the fact that they were sicker longer on the job. It was hard for them to get better. At the community level, workers talked about a lack of good jobs within their community, and so they were often traveling farther distances for their job. They didn't have access to a private vehicle, so they were relying on public transportation. So this added time and money to their commute. So if they weren't feeling sick at work, this was a disincentive. They weren't going to go home in the middle of the day. This was a barrier to going home and meeting that requirement. And they echoed this sentiment with the fact that they had to go to laundromats to clean their clothes. They didn't have washers and dryers, and same with doctors. And then on a policy level, I just want to highlight, a lot of people mentioned that just poor economic conditions generally meant that they were going to do whatever it took to keep that job that they had, and often this meant showing up to work when they weren't feeling well. So workers mentioned a variety of factors that they perceived to be barriers to proper food safety practice, and these factors were often in addition to knowledge, which is what is emphasized so greatly within our U.S. food safety system. Using a social ecological approach, which emphasizes that interventions are going to be more effective if we address factors at multiple levels. So again, if we expand upon this training that's emphasized in the U.S. food safety laws, we may have more effective interventions and help workers handle food safely. And I think this study really emphasizes the value in including workers and their perspectives in this type of research. The workers brought up a lot of factors that haven't been mentioned in the research before. So really it's an opportunity to include workers in this work. I'll skip over. The last thing I just want to highlight is that by using a social determinants frame to really push into the food safety literature, we may develop these more comprehensive interventions, but also by redirecting attention away from simply looking at workers at the individual level and addressing these issues as simply knowledge problems, we may reduce worker blame that's often associated with this issue. And while we often think about food safety as the domain of environmental health scientists or microbiologists, I hope that some of this research can reveal the value that social and behavioral scientists and public health researchers can have in helping to support workers in handling food safety and ensuring the safety of our food supply. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.